I want you to imagine an intruder breaking into a highly secured corporate building. But instead of picking the locks or shattering a window or, I don't know, rappelling down an elevator shaft, they just use the homeowner's own keys.
Right, the easiest way in.
Exactly. They just walk right through the front door, find a janitor's uniform, put it on, and then use the master keys on that janitor's belt to open literally every single door in the building.
And the security cameras see them, but they just look like a normal employee doing their job.
Yeah, and they take over the entire building, locking everyone out in under 30 minutes.
It's a chilling visual, mainly because at that point, the alarms aren't even ringing. The security system actually thinks everything is operating normally. I mean, the architecture you paid millions of dollars for is actively working against you.
Because while we are all busy locking our digital windows, attackers are just, well, they're simply walking through the front door. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at the March 2026 Standard Edition of the New Zealand Incident Response Bulletin, which is published by Incident Response Solutions.
It's a really comprehensive report.
It is. And our mission for you today is to decode this massive, rapid shift happening in cybersecurity right now. We need to figure out why cyber attacks have stopped being these isolated IT problems handled down in a basement and have rapidly become total boardroom-level crises.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking about multi-million dollar fines, the weaponization of artificial intelligence, and just massive supply chain failures.
Yeah, and to understand the sheer scale of this shift, we really have to look at the economic hemorrhage happening right now. Based on the bulletin's data, New Zealanders are losing over $1.6 billion annually to cybercrime.
Wow, $1.6
billion. Yeah, primarily driven by fraud. And keep in mind, that $1.6 billion is just what's reported.
Right, because nobody wants to admit they got scammed.
Exactly. The real number is likely much, much higher because of the reputational shame attached to admitting a financial breach. You know, companies don't want to broadcast that they lost customer money.
And it is absolutely systemic. I mean, the data shows 59% of large New Zealand businesses experienced a cyber incident in the last year alone. So if you are a business leader listening to this, or even just a consumer trusting these organizations with your personal data, the odds are really no longer in your favor.
No, they aren't. The landscape has moved way past the point where a company can assume they just won't be targeted. The new reality is assuming the attacker is already inside.
Which changes everything.
It does. It drastically changes the metrics of how we even measure security.
Which brings us to a terrifying metric from this threat intelligence report. 29 minutes.
Yeah, that number is staggering.
It's insane. 29 minutes is the average time an attacker now needs to move from their initial access point to lateral movement within a network. Okay, let's unpack this, because if an attacker is moving in 29 minutes, our traditional response time measured in hours or days is basically like calling the fire department after the house is already burned down.
That is the perfect analogy, because what's fascinating here is how they achieve that speed. Let's mechanically break down what those 29 minutes actually look like, because the speed itself is what breaks our traditional defenses.
Right. So at minute zero.
At minute zero, an employee maybe clicks a sophisticated phishing link, or they reuse a compromised password. The attacker gets a foothold, usually just on a single laptop or, you know, some unmanaged remote device.
So they aren't instantly grabbing the crown jewels. They're just standing in the lobby.
Precisely. They're just in the lobby. But by minute 10, they aren't downloading noisy malware that antivirus software would catch. They don't need to. They are opening built-in diagnostic tools. They are doing what the industry calls living off the land.
Ah, living off the land. This goes back to that janitor analogy. They are using the administrative tools that are already built into the computer's operating system. Things like PowerShell.
Exactly. And because they are using legitimate tools, the automated defense systems just see an IT administrator running routine commands. There's no red flag.
The camouflage is perfect.
It really is. By minute 20, they're using automated playbooks to map the network architecture, figuring out where the sensitive databases live. And by minute 29, they've stolen an administrator token and moved laterally onto a critical server.
So they've bypassed the firewall entirely.
Yep. Because they are operating from the inside out.
And the real-world consequences of this speed are moving far beyond just stolen data sitting on a dark web server somewhere. We are seeing physical supply chains completely seize up. The Bulletin highlights this fascinating case study with Hazeldene's.
Oh, the major chicken meat processor in Australia?
Yeah, Hazeldene's. They suffered a cyber attack, and the result wasn't just some compromised emails. The digital breach caused a literal physical production halt.
The mechanics of that failure are crucial to understand, especially for anyone in manufacturing. In modern processing plants, everything is interconnected.
Right, it's not just computers on desks anymore.
No, not at all. The production lines, the packaging workflows, the refrigeration sensors, they all run on the corporate network. So when the attack hit, Hazeldene's was forced to shut down their on-site Wi-Fi and sever their network connections just to contain that 29-minute spread.
Wow, so they had to blind themselves to stop the attack.
Exactly. And without those networks, they physically could not process or package the chicken. The machines wouldn't run.
The domino effect of that is just wild. A digital failure at a processing plant instantly flowed downstream. Wholesalers, local pubs, butchers, they all suddenly reported immediate shortages. Like, the local pub literally can't serve a chicken parmigiana because an attacker used stolen credentials to get into a meat processor's IT system.
It perfectly illustrates that your suppliers are now your single points of failure. The traditional mindset for business was to build a giant preventative wall around the perimeter, keep the bad guys out.
A moat and a castle.
Right. But if attackers are bypassing the wall and moving laterally in 29 minutes, the perimeter is obsolete. Business continuity now depends entirely on internal containment.
So you need tighter internal controls.
You need much tighter identity controls. You need network segmentation, so an infected laptop in accounting can't suddenly talk to the factory refrigeration controls. And you need to be able to spot that intruder wearing the janitor's uniform immediately.
That requirement for hypervigilance creates a massive contradiction in how corporate boards are actually behaving right now, because companies are prioritizing a shiny new technological distraction over basic security, and they're leaving the door wide open for these rapid breaches. I'm talking, of course, about the obsession with artificial intelligence.
Yes, the AI paradox. It is arguably the most dangerous blind spot in corporate governance today. There is this massive divergence between what executives want from AI and what they are actually willing to do to secure it.
The numbers in the PwC CEO survey, which is cited in the bulletin, they lay this out bare. Executives are incredibly optimistic about economic recovery, and they are rushing to win the AI race.
Oh, everyone wants AI right now.
Right. They want the productivity gains, the automated customer service chatbots, the streamlined coding. But only about a third of those same CEOs plan to take any significant action to improve their cyber resilience over the next 3 years. They're stomping on the accelerator while completely ignoring the brakes.
And by rushing to integrate AI, they are inherently expanding their attack surface. Let's look at the mechanics of why AI makes a company more vulnerable.
Yeah, how does that actually work?
Well, when you plug a large language model into your corporate ecosystem, you are creating entirely new data flows. You're giving an AI agent access to your proprietary databases so it can learn and answer questions. You're connecting new third-party APIs.
So you're punching more holes in the wall.
Exactly. Every single one of those new connections is a potential new open window for an attacker. An attacker who, remember, only needs 29 minutes to exploit it.
Meanwhile, the general public is looking at AI through a completely different lens. The Australian research in the bulletin shows that over half of adults are terrified of AI being used to cause them harm.
Yeah, the public is very wary.
They aren't thinking about corporate productivity gains. They are worried about being tracked, having their personal devices accessed, or being financially ruined by a deepfake impersonation. Here's where it gets really interesting. We're seeing CEOs rush to adopt AI, but the public is terrified of deepfakes and fraud. Doesn't this mean fraud and identity risks are no longer just security issues, but massive brand reputation issues for these companies?
I mean, without a doubt, the public is highly attuned to the risks of deception because they see it every single day on their feeds. They hear the AI voice cloning scams, they see the manipulated videos, and they realize how easily their identity or the identity of a brand they trust could be weaponized.
Yeah, if a customer gets scammed by an AI chatbot that perfectly mimics their bank's interface, they aren't going to blame the AI algorithm. They're going to blame the bank for not protecting them.
And that trust deficit is quickly becoming a massive financial liability. Modernizing your technology stack with AI without simultaneously implementing deepfake-resistant verification is basically corporate malpractice at this point.
It's just reckless.
It is. The bulletin explicitly warns that customer authentication must evolve. It's no longer enough to just verify a password because passwords can be stolen or guessed by AI. You have to cryptographically verify the actual human being on the other end of the transaction, especially for high-risk financial activities.
Because companies are prioritizing AI rollouts over basic security hygiene and leaving their customers exposed to these lightning-fast breaches, Regulators are finally realizing the free market isn't going to fix this on its own.
Not at all.
They're losing patience, and they are stepping in with a remarkably heavy hand. We are seeing a global shift from polite regulatory guidance to aggressive punitive enforcement.
We have officially entered the era of real consequences. Regulators are no longer treating cyber breaches as unfortunate, unavoidable accidents. They're treating them as failures of corporate governance.
We saw this explicitly in Australia recently. ASIC, the corporate regulator over there, took action against a firm called FIIG Securities.
Mm.
And they didn't just issue a stern warning. They hit them with a $2.5 million fine, plus ordered them to pay $500,000 in costs.
That is a serious penalty.
Yeah. And the justification for the fine is the really interesting part. It wasn't just because they suffered a breach in 2023, where 385 gigabytes of sensitive data was stolen and leaked on the dark web, exposing nearly 18,000 clients.
Right. The penalty was specifically for inadequate cyber controls over a period of 4 years leading up to the breach.
Yeah. 4 years of looking the other way.
Exactly. Regulators are now looking at historical negligence. They are examining board meeting minutes from 3 years ago to see if executives were warned about outdated firewalls and chose to ignore it just to save money. ASIC forced FIIG to implement a massive compliance program and hire independent auditors at their own expense.
And the escalation is even more severe in the UK. HM Treasury and the Office of Financial Sanctions Implementation, or OFSI, have launched their first investigations into financial firms breaching cyber sanctions. The financial penalties are staggering.
Oh, the UK fines are huge.
Yeah. Civil fines can reach £1 million or 50% of the breach value. They can levy unlimited criminal fines. But the real mechanism for changing behavior is the personal liability. Senior managers could face up to 7 years in prison for compliance failures.
See, the moment you introduce the threat of prison time for senior executives, the entire corporate conversation changes. Cyber risk instantly shifts from a delegated IT task that gets ignored at the bottom of the board agenda to a personal liability for the CEO. You suddenly see budgets for security software getting approved very, very quickly.
I bet. Now, New Zealand regulators are watching this global crackdown closely and demanding similar powers. Following the Manage My Health incident, which involved the theft of sensitive health records and a subsequent extortion demand, Privacy Commissioner Michael Webster has been very vocal.
Yes, he has.
He argues that the current Privacy Act 2020 lacks the teeth to create meaningful accountability. He is pointing directly to Australia's multi-million dollar penalties as the exact kind of real consequences needed here. It feels like the health inspector used to just give you a warning for a dirty kitchen, but now they are padlocking the doors and throwing the manager in jail. So what does this all mean for the board of directors?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it means cyber resilience is becoming your actual license to operate. Like your restaurant analogy, if you run a restaurant and you repeatedly fail health inspections, the city shuts you down. Regulators are applying that exact same logic to data.
Which makes sense.
It does. If you want the privilege of holding consumer data, you have to prove you are actively defending it. If you treat security as an afterthought, the state will step in and penalize you until it hurts.
So the stakes are incredibly high. Billions of dollars are vaporizing, supply chains are at risk of freezing up, and regulators are threatening to throw executives in jail. In response, governments are trying to build national roadmaps to coordinate a defense.
Right, the national strategies.
Yeah. The New Zealand government recently released the Cybersecurity Strategy 2026-2030, along with a near-term action plan for 2026 to 2027. They are explicitly treating cyber threats as a core national security issue, noting that last year, 331 incidents had to be triaged for specialist technical support because they had potential national significance.
And building a whole-of-society framework at the national level is essential. I mean, when you have state-sponsored actors and industrialized criminal syndicates targeting critical infrastructure, individual businesses cannot fight that war alone.
But the experts actually fighting this war on the ground see a massive disconnect between the government's grand master plan and the reality of how money is actually being stolen.
Yeah, there's a big gap there.
The team at Incident Response Solutions, who have 24 years of frontline experience, point out two massive blind spots in the government's action plan. The first gap is a lack of specific enforcement for everyday commercial crimes, specifically business email compromise, or BEC, and the network of money mules that enable it.
This is a critical area where high-level national security strategy often misses the low-tech reality of daily economic devastation. Business email compromise doesn't usually involve zero-day exploits or advanced AI hacking. It involves human deception.
Let's map out exactly how a BEC attack works, because it sounds like simple spam, but it's actually the biggest driver of the cybercrime economy.
The mechanics are devastatingly simple. An attacker compromises a business email account, perhaps a vendor who supplies raw materials to a manufacturing firm. The attacker doesn't lock the account or steal data immediately.
They just hide.
Right. They just sit silently and monitor the inbox. They read the emails. They wait for a large, legitimate invoice to be generated. Let's say the vendor sends an invoice for a $500,000 raw material shipment.
And the attacker intercepts that specific email before the manufacturer even reads it.
Correct. They intercept the email, alter the PDF invoice to change the bank account routing numbers, and then send it on from the legitimate email address. The manufacturer receives the email, sees it's from their trusted vendor, and pays the $500,000.
But the money goes to the attacker.
Well, not directly. That money doesn't go to the attacker's offshore account directly. It goes to a local money mule.
And who are these mules? Are they, like, part of the criminal syndicate?
Sometimes they are willing accomplices, but very often they're just unwitting victims. They are local people who responded to a fake work-from-home job advertisement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they are hired as, quote-unquote, payment processing agents. Their job is to receive funds into their personal bank account, keep a 10% commission, and immediately wire the rest to an untraceable offshore crypto exchange. By the time the vendor calls the manufacturer 2 weeks later asking where their $500,000 is, the money is gone.
And the local mule is left holding the bag.
Exactly. The crypto is laundered, and the local mule is the only one left for the police to find.
The frontline experts are arguing that while the government is focused on national security frameworks, the actual bleeding of the economy is happening through these mules. If the police don't prioritize local enforcement and actively prosecute the money mule networks to disrupt the laundering pipeline, the cybercrime economy will just keep growing, regardless of how many strategy documents get published.
Because the financial incentive for the attackers relies entirely on their ability to cash out. If you break the local mule network, you break the business model of business email compromise.
That makes total sense. Now, the second gap the experts identified in the national strategy is almost more surprising, because it has nothing to do with external hackers. The government strategy fails to adequately address the insider threat. We are seeing a rapid rise in the theft of sensitive intellectual property by internal staff. Wait, really? We're spending all this time and money building fortresses to keep out foreign hackers, but the real threat might just be an employee emailing a proprietary client list to their personal account before they quit.
Yeah. This raises an important question about where businesses should actually be allocating their resources. We spend billions of dollars building digital fortresses to keep foreign adversaries and criminal syndicates out, but the perimeter is completely useless if the threat is an authorized user sitting at a desk inside the building.
It's the scenario of Bob from accounting, who has legitimate administrative access, deciding to download a client list 3 days before he leaves to join a rival firm.
And managing that risk is incredibly complex for a business. The bulletin notes that numerous cases of intellectual property theft are currently ending up in the Employment Relations Authority or the Employment Court.
So it becomes an HR issue.
Exactly. The battleground isn't just a technical firewall anymore, it's employment law. But businesses feel they lack the specific legislative support and practical frameworks necessary to monitor staff behavior aggressively enough to prevent the theft without violating privacy laws.
It completely challenges where a company should spend its security budget. I mean, you can buy the most advanced AI-driven threat detection system on the market, but if the person with a legitimate password simply decides to walk out the door with your data, the technology can't stop human nature.
No, it can't. Security has to be behavioral. It has to look for anomalies in how employees interact with data rather than just constantly scanning for external malware.
It demands a holistic view of risk.
It really does. You must coordinate defense against the sophisticated 29-minute external breach while simultaneously managing the internal human risk, all under the looming threat of regulatory prison sentences if you fail to balance both perfectly.
To recap the terrain we've covered today, we started with the chilling mechanics of the 29-minute breach window, where attackers use our own internal tools to move laterally before the IT department even realizes they are under attack.
The living off the land strategy.
Right. And we saw how a single compromised network at a chicken processor can strip the shelves bare at local businesses, proving how fragile our interconnected supply chains really are. We unpack the AI paradox, where executives are accelerating their technological adoption while ignoring the gaping security holes and the massive brand reputation risks of deepfake fraud.
The huge blind spot.
Huge. We looked at the heavy hand of global regulators, from Australia's multi-million dollar fines to the UK's threat of prison time, who are finally demanding the data protection become a non-negotiable license to operate. And finally, we saw the blind spots in our national strategies, reminding us that the low-tech threat of money mules and disgruntled employees often bypasses our most expensive digital defenses.
For you listening, whether you are an executive authorizing a new third-party software integration, or just an everyday consumer deciding which companies deserve your personal data, understanding the mechanics of these failures is your best defense. We are living in a moment of extreme friction between rapid technological adoption and fundamental vulnerability. Recognizing that the threat is often moving faster than the defense, and sometimes operating from inside the house, it changes how you evaluate risk on a daily basis.
It requires a completely new mindset. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. If a sophisticated attacker only needs 29 minutes to completely compromise and take over a corporate network, but it takes the average corporate bureaucracy 3 weeks, 5 committee meetings, and a dozen signature approvals just to authorize a routine software security update, who is really in control of the digital world? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.